This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Charlie Davis, a Louisiana Republican Party activist. The national GOP is coming to New Orleans next week with the likes of the Donald, Mr. Trump, Governor Rick Perry, and of course, the man who wants to be the next president of the United States, Bobby Jindal. We'll talk with Charlie Davis about the Republican Leadership Conference and also about how the GOP stands in a solidly red state. And we'll visit with John Kennedy, a newborn Republican, the state treasurer, who's trying to get a grip on the budget. He has a bill that has been tweaked that would reduce consulting contracts in Louisiana. Treasurer Kennedy says this is a panacea for the state's budget ills. We'll talk with him. And songwriter Casey Kelly, who wrote George Strait's anthem. We'll talk with him. But now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Our guest is Charlie Davis, a strategic consultant and activist with the Louisiana GOP. And next week, national Republicans will convene in New Orleans, where they've convened before. Remember 1988 when George H.W. Bush got the Republican nomination for president? He did so at the Louisiana Superdome, and the national GOP will meet in the Crescent City next week as part of the Republican Leadership Conference. And Charlie Davis, the Louisiana activist born in Sanama, who is all of 38 years old, born in 1976, the year that Gerald Ford lost the presidency in a cliffhanger to Jimmy Carter. He's with us, and next week in New Orleans, the headliner is a guy we're familiar with, Governor Bobby Jindal. Is he going to be the 45th American president, Charlie Davis?
Well, that's a great question. We'll solve a lot of puzzles next week in New Orleans, but I don't think that's going to be one of them. But Republican superstars from around the country will come down to New Orleans for 3 days of getting to know each other, of working on issues, of hearing from candidates, mm-hmm. and hopefully getting the base excited for the elections in November.
Would you characterize Governor Jindal as a Republican superstar?
Absolutely. Yeah, he's very popular around the country.
Very popular around the country. Can he beat the Democratic nominee in 2016?
Well, I would hope that whoever we nominate will beat the Democratic nominee in 2016.
Well, naturally you hope that, but is Governor Jindal the guy to take down Hillary Clinton or Jerry Brown or any Democrat who emerges as the Democratic nominee in a couple of years?
You know, I get that question a lot, as you might imagine, from folks in Louisiana and outside of Louisiana. And what I tell people is, there's a very short list of people who have a legitimate chance to be the leader of the free world. And regardless of which side you are on certain issues, or your opinion of Governor Jindal, he's definitely on the list and probably will be for a while. So I think not only does he have a shot of being the nominee, if he is the nominee, whoever that person will be, ought to beat Hillary Clinton. I think the country has had enough after 8 years of Barack Obama.
All right. So you think it could be Jindal versus Clinton?
I think you think it could be, but it's certainly possible. We'll see if Hillary Clinton runs. I think Jindal's more likely than Hillary Clinton at this point.
Jindal's more likely than Hillary?
I think so.
Yeah, well, Hillary, I think, would be the favorite for the Democratic nomination.
Yeah, she was the favorite 8 years ago as well, of course.
Yeah, she was, and she didn't get it. And sometimes things go awry. And Governor Jindal, I think, has been running for president for the last 6 years. Would you agree with that he's used the governorship as a springboard to higher office?
You know, I think everybody in elected office, just by the nature of your job duties, it sort of becomes a springboard for future office. It's one of the unintended consequences of a lot of our campaign finance regulation is it makes it incredibly difficult to defeat an incumbent. It makes it incredibly difficult for somebody who's not already an elected official to run for higher office.
Well, do you think that Governor Jindal has done a good job?
Absolutely.
On a 1 to 10 basis, you're grading Charlie Davis, the pride of Sanama, graduate of the Louisiana School in Natchitoches.
That is a great, I'm going to have to think about a 1 to 10 rating and get back to you.
I sound like John McLaughlin on a scale of 1 to 10. Well, certainly
bye.
You wouldn't give him a 5.
Certainly not.
Okay, so you probably wouldn't even give him a 7. So
why don't we just call it a 8.5?
8.5, he says, for Governor Bobby Jindal as governor of Louisiana in the last 6 years. And the man who, if he gets his way on January 20th, 2017, Bobby Jindal will be taking the oath of office as the 45th American president. Another guy in New Orleans who perhaps will get as much or more attention than our governor is the Donald, Mr. Trump, who's bringing the Miss USA pageant to Baton Rouge in a few weeks, and he'll make a stop in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I remember Donald Trump several years ago calling for a millionaire's tax, or a billionaire's tax, a billionaire's tax. He thought that he and others who had been blessed by the harvest of wealth in this great country of ours should pay a big tax to balance the budget. I don't hear him talking like that anymore.
I would imagine we could go through a whole litany of proposals that Donald Trump has had, you know, has had over the years.
Is he still on that birth certificate kick?
I don't think anyone's been on the birth certificate kick in quite some time.
Except for Donald Trump. But I'll be eager to hear what he has to say. He's certainly an interesting man.
He really is. He brings a lot of energy to the party. You know, guys like Donald Trump, obviously Ted Cruz was coming as well, Ben Sasse from Nebraska. We bring together a pretty wide an impressive list of speakers for New Orleans. And one of the things that makes this conference so successful is the city of New Orleans itself. You know, it's a real jewel for Louisiana to have such a tourist destination where people are sort of happy to come from around the country.
297-5633 if you'd like to talk with Charlie Davis, who's revving up for the Republican Leadership Conference in New Orleans next week. Among those attending, Governor Jindal, Governor Perry of Mississippi, of Texas. The governor of Mississippi will be there as well.
Correct, Phil Bryant.
And you'll have Ted Cruz, senator from Texas, who will be there, and many others. And this is kind of a measurement of where the Republican Party is right now heading forward. And just about anybody who's publicly announced intentions to seek the presidency in 2016 will be there to rub shoulders and make friends and maybe a few enemies along the way.
I guess that's the nature of politics.
It is indeed. Swede writes, how can an absentee governor with such a poor policy record in Louisiana possibly be a contender to take on Hillary Clinton? Your response, Charlie Davis.
Well, it is interesting that I get this question all the time around the country, as I said a minute ago. And Governor Jindal, his popularity wanes and waxes in Louisiana, like any sitting governor's does. But he is... when you travel around the country with activists and donors in the Republican Party, I mean, he did a great job running RGA. He's a very popular figure, and there's no doubt he'll be on the short list for the presidency.
The short list to be president, but he we've commented on this show. He does appear to be a bit taller in recent events, so either his shoes are maybe giving him a little help, or maybe it's some workout regimen. But I did read today.
I did read today
that Vladimir Putin, who of course cavorts about with his shirt off quite a bit, is only 5'6". So Governor Jindal, if he becomes president, would tower over President Putin.
There you go.
297-5633 is your number for Charlie Davis. A Republican activist born in 1976 in Santa Monica. Now, when you were born, Charlie, Louisiana was a solidly blue state. Democrats controlled all the statewide offices. Both U.S. senators were Democrats. The legislature was largely Democratic. Now that's not the case. What's happened in our state?
Well, the party, I think, the Republican Party obviously has blossomed here in Louisiana, just like it has in many places around the country. And I think over time... voters realize that the policies that put more power in the hands of individual people and less control from the state or federal level provide a better quality of life. And so it's just a natural move over to the Republican Party.
A natural move, but is it, remember, you're probably one of your heroes, Ronald Reagan said, I didn't leave the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party left me. Mm-hmm. What's happened to cause this move?
it's pretty clear, I don't think most people would argue, that the Democratic Party continues to move further and further to the left, and I think that drives a lot of people to the Republican Party. In this country, for a variety of reasons, you know, we have two parties. I think if it wasn't for some of the ballot access laws, some of the ways that the campaign finance structure is built, maybe you would have seen a third party by now. But by the nature of the country, this, the way our system is set up, at least right now, it's very difficult for a third party to pop up. So when you're trying to put the entire population, you know, of a country into one pocket or another, you're bound to have issues with either side.
Well, you may have a point that some Democrats would agree with, that the Democratic Party has moved nationally too far to the left, but perhaps the Republican Party is inching to the right to the point that it might not be palatable. For example, in Louisiana, 67 votes to keep in place an unconstitutional sodomy law, that from the Louisiana House. And not one Republican voted to overturn an unconstitutional law. That's something that I think somebody who would look at our state would say Louisiana's not perhaps in step with America, or perhaps are we? What do you think?
Well, I think certainly Louisiana is a little out of step from the rest of the country on a lot of levels. Whether that's a good or bad thing probably depends on what the issue you're talking about is. But, you know, one thing I realized when I got involved in politics, there are a number of unconstitutional bills on the, you know, on the books. And so I think that's a separate issue, whether you should go through and try to, quote unquote, clean up the books on an annual basis. I'm not sure it'd even be possible.
But if you know something's unconstitutional,
well, we know a lot of issues are constitutional.
Why in the world would you vote to keep it on the books?
Well, we know a lot of bills, a lot of things are unconstitutional. We also know the courts change their minds back and forth. So I think it's an interesting question is what's, you know, once a Supreme Court or a state law is impacted by a judge's decision, at what point in time do you go back and redo the legislation?
All right. Here's another bill that is making its way through the process and may very well end up on the governor's desk. House Bill 305 provides that no representative of a business or organization that performs abortion may provide instruction in schools that receive state funding. So in other words, if you work for Planned Parenthood, you could not teach children in Louisiana public schools. Is that a good bill?
I haven't read the bill, but my understanding is it's trying to protect students from the people who are profiting off the abortion industry. So certainly, by most standards, I would say that's a great idea.
But we do live in a country with free speech. Some people are in favor of abortion rights. Some people are against. If somebody contributes to an organization that is part of its overall mission, helps people who are in need get abortions, should they be prevented from teaching in public schools in the great state of Louisiana, Charlie Davis?
I don't think that bill impacts people who've donated to an organization. My understanding is that it impacts people who work for an organization. But to be honest with you, I have not read the bill, so I'm probably not the best person to speak to it.
Okay. Veronica in Denham Springs. Good morning, Veronica. You're on the air with Charlie Davis.
Hi. As a very frustrated liberal, I'd like to argue that the Democratic Party is not moving to the left. In fact, we've allowed our president to expand droning. He has a foreign policy that Dick Cheney would probably be proud of. And I think if Reagan were allowed to date, he'd be a Democrat.
If who were allowed to be?
I think she said if Reagan were allowed
to be. Well, Reagan, of course, we can pull out the speeches. He was passionately in favor of Hubert Humphrey in 1948, he backed Harry Truman over Tom Dewey for president and was on the trail. Somewhere along the way, he had an epiphany, kind of like Congressman Cassidy. But Veronica makes an argument that some Democrats make, that Barack Obama is a conservative president.
I can see you smiling. You can't even ask that question with a straight face. You know, I thought the most interesting part of her comment was the phrase, "I'm a frustrated liberal." You know, and that made me smile because I have to imagine it. If you're liberal, you're bound to spend most of the day being frustrated.
Well, I think on foreign policy, Obama has been largely conservative. And on some things, I would certainly disagree with him as far as access to records and openness in government, things he campaigned as a stalwart for. he's not followed through.
He certainly hasn't followed through, but that's not evidence that he's conservative. You know, that's evidence that he's part of the sort of a big government liberal philosophy. But, he can do whatever he wants, and it doesn't matter what the rules or laws are.
These conservatives with money certainly have to be pleased that the Dow Jones Industrial Average has gone from about 7,500 to 16,500 on the watch of Barack Hussein Obama. So he's been a great friend to Wall Street. Is Barack Obama a conservative president of the United States? 297-5633, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And Charlie Davis, Louisiana GOP activist, is with us. Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles. You're on the air with Charlie.
Good morning, Jimmy. Good morning, Charlie. From an almost Charlie, I prefer Charles. Let me tell you something. I love the conversation this morning. Louisiana, unlike the rest of the nation, is on its way to change, but not the kind of change that's in step with the country. The rest of the country is turning deep blue, and I know that's driving my conservative Republican friends nuts. But let me say this. My governor and the Republican Party in Louisiana, they look more like Putin and the communists. They don't want to let you vote on the minimum wage. They don't want to let you vote on expanding Medicaid. And they definitely don't want to talk about the separate standards for public and private school students. So I love what this young man is saying. Like I said, Vladimir Putin and the communists in the Soviet Union, or in the former Soviet Union, would be proud. And I'm proud to help drive deep blue deep in Louisiana.
All right. Charles is revved up. Interesting today, Bobby Jindal, who, as we know, was a big defender of Common Core, an advocate, he was really out there, and now he's against it. And he says in his latest statement that centralized planning didn't work in Russia, it's not working with our healthcare system, and it won't work in education. Your response?
Well, to the caller's perspective, I think certainly the Republicans would agree that as the country becomes bluer and bluer, it's becoming more in the way that Vladimir Putin certainly would expect it to be. To the governor's comment, I think centralized planning does not work. Despite the fact that everyone wishes it would and keeps trying it over and over and over again. I mean, whether you're talking about a city, a parish, a state, or a federal government, individuals who are closest to the problem are best equipped to solve it. You add very little benefit to a dollar of a solution when you take a dollar out of a person's pocket and pass it through federal bureaucrats and turn it into 75 cents when it gets back down to the street level. So there's a lot more good that can and should be done in our country. Most of it happens by letting individuals and organizations do what it is they want to do, which is to help people, not by trying to offshore that responsibility to some bureaucrat
right,
somewhere.
So
and then getting
like,
mad when they screw it up.
Do you like Common Core?
You know, I think Common Core is a fascinating topic from a political perspective on numerous levels. It's a number of people trying to raise the standards, which I think is an admirable goal. It certainly has lit a grassroots fire around this country like I haven't seen probably, you know,
is
in the last decade.
Is that a yes? You like it?
I like some things about it and dislike other things about it.
But the governor has gone from one extreme to the other. He's now comparing it to centralized planning in Russia. Doesn't sound like he's in favor of it.
I'm pretty sure he's. I think you can put him down for against.
All right.
Just in case there was any confusion.
Jim in Prairieville. Hi, Jim. You're on the air with Charlie Davis.
Hey, Jim. Charlie made a statement earlier. I take offense to, and that is that
only
Republican,
one.
Well, you only have time for one. He mentioned the fact that the Republican Party has brought more prosperity to the government, or to the country. And I'd like to point out that in 1970, the Republican Party said that they were going to save American jobs by eliminating high-priced union labor, regulation, and environmental concerns. Now, in the past 40 years, they have eliminated a lot of environment, or weakened a lot of environment laws. They've eliminated all of the protections put in place by the New Deal.
Your response?
Well, it's sort of a broad accusation to accuse one party of all those things. I would say the New Deal made our country significantly worse than it would have been had it not been
impacted. So you're saying FDR was not a good president?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Bobby Jindal gets an 8.5 from Charlie Davis. FDR in his 12 years as president, what do you give him on a scale of 1 to 10?
Let's call it a 6.5.
A 6.5. Okay.
We're grading on the curve for Democrats.
Okay. Ed on Highland. Ed, you're on the air with Charlie Davis. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Jim. I want to commend you, Jim, for having Charlie Davis on, whom I don't know. I'd like to get to know better, and am getting to know. He's a breath of fresh air on the lineup of people that you've had on the program. And that's really concerned me for those of you listeners who aren't progressive. But my question
Ed, most of our guests are from the right because the state is viewed rightward and most public officials are from the right. Now, I would give you this. A lot of our callers, they get charged up by the likes of Mr. Davis and they call in and they let him have it. But I would argue with you that most of our guests are not liberal by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, Jim, if that's the case, let's invite them all to New Orleans next week for the Republican Leadership Conference.
Yeah, right. and so you certainly know who you've invited on the program. I guess I just have missed listening those days when you've had those conservative people on. But my question to Charlie, by the way, though, keep up the good show, is who do you anticipate, a little early, for running in the for the governor's race, both Republican and Democrat? Louisiana.
All right. Next year, we got a governor's race. Who's going to run?
Well, I think the announced candidate so far would be Senator David Vitter, Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden, and is it John Bell Elward from the Democratic Party? I would assume
yes.
There are rumors abounding about Jim Bernhard on the Dem mm-hmm. side that might get in.
Right.
Perhaps Mitch, the mayor of New Orleans. I think the field
you're on
probably
a first name basis with him.
What's that?
You're on a first name basis. With
well, there's him, so many Landrys running around. We're trying to keep them straight.
Yeah, well, Republican side, you have any preference?
I don't have a preference. I'm not involved in the campaign yet. I'm glad to see so many great Republicans running for office.
Well, David Vitter, you think he's been a good senator, I would presume?
Yeah, I think he's done a great job as well.
Okay. Will he be at the Republican Leadership Conference next week?
He sure will be, yeah. We have four senators. David Vitter is one of them. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. Senator Ted Cruz, and I think Mike Lee from Utah.
So you've got four senators and another possible senator, right?
Ben Sass, yeah, from Nebraska.
From Nebraska. And David Vitter, he's 53 years old, and when he runs for governor next year, he'll be 54. I think the master plans for him to serve two terms as governor. He'll be 62. His term would finish in 2024, just in time for the 2024 presidential election. I think we may have Bobby Jindal perhaps running and winning and succeeded as president by David Bruce Vitter. Louisiana could dominate the national political scene for many years to come, Charlie.
You know, I think the odds of LSU winning a national championship are probably much better than Louisiana dominating the White House
LSU's
for 16 years.
Won it twice in the last decade, so maybe Louisiana will win the presidency twice in the next decade.
You know, that would be impressive, and more impressive, is the glow in your eye, how excited you are about having Bobby Jindal president and then David Vitter. So I'm sure both those guys would appreciate that.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Good morning, Phil. You're on with Charlie Davis.
Good morning, Jim. I'd just like to point out that the state is famous going back years now for passing unconstitutional laws. We've been under court order under the federal justice system for civil rights violations at Angola. That recently just got ended. Our school desegregation history is really pitiful, and I think those suits are just now getting settled. So for your Republican family values legislators to keep throwing out laws that are unconstitutional. Those are the most frivolous lawsuits, in my opinion.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what he's referring to, but I do know that what Eric Holder and the Department of Justice tried to do by stopping poor kids from leaving bad schools to get into the schools of their choice, I think is one of probably the bigger overreaches of the Obama administration, and certainly sets a terrible precedent to try to keep a student locked into a school they don't want to go to.
Okay. Charlie Davis, for those who'd like more information about the Republican Leadership Conference next week in the great city of New Orleans, how do they find you and your GOP stalwarts?
The easiest way is probably our website, rlc2014.com. Republican Leadership Conference. It's next Thursday through Saturday, May 29th through 31st. And for all of the right-wing radicals who listen to this show all the time, the biggest Republican event by far in the state, and really one of the more prominent Republican events in the country.
Well, thank you, Charlie, and let's talk again.
You got it.
John Kennedy, the state treasurer, is with us, and he's weaving his way from committee room to committee room right now as the legislature winds down the session. And one of the measures still in the process that's still alive is Treasurer Kennedy's attempt to reduce consulting contracts in the state of Louisiana. Good morning, Treasurer. John Kennedy, can you hear yours truly? All right, Frank, tell you what, let's see if we can get the Treasurer back. He may have had to dart into a committee room to testify. House Bill 142 is the bill that the Treasurer is touting, and it has been tweaked, and it now provides that all state dollar contracts totaling $40,000 or more of general funds would have to go before the Joint Legislative Committee on the budget. And Treasurer Kennedy started by asking that 15% of consulting contracts be cut, and he said that would be a way for the state to not only balance the budget, but to infuse new dollars into higher education and to make the state whole again. I think we've got Treasurer Kennedy large and in charge. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim.
Where's the bill right now? We can hear you.
The bill's on the Senate floor, Jim, and it's House Bill 142. And it may come up today. We've been talking to all the senators, and there will be opposition. The administration is working pretty hard against it. I'm still trying to work something out with them, but it's so late in the game, I doubt I can. One of the things that's helping the bill, it's not my persuasiveness, it's just the fact that higher education's in such bad shape. We just got to do something. I have $4 million left in their account to get us through the end of June, and I've already loaned the administration $70 million, so things are really tight. This bill will help. It won't solve all our financial problems for our universities, but it'll help.
Now, I had Quinn Hillier, who's a conservative columnist, on this show a few days ago, and I used your number of 67% of higher education funding being cut in the last 6 years, and Quinn did not dispute that, but he did say that funding prior to Katrina, or actually after Katrina, was infused, higher education was, by national dollars, and that 67% is an artificial number. Is that accurate, or is Quinn off his rocker?
No. Not all. Certainly he's not off his rocker. He's a very bright guy. He did take a lot of federal stimulus money. I know the word went out that Louisiana didn't take President Obama's money, but, you know, whether you think it was a good idea or a bad idea, we did. The governor took somewhere in the neighborhood of $3, $4 billion. Most of that money went to health care. Now, some of it did go to higher education, but not nearly anywhere close to $3 to $4 billion.
And well, that would be in the last 6 years, though.
Yes. And it is a fact that since 2008, the state general fund contribution to our universities has gone from $1.6 billion when Governor Blanco left to about $500 million today. Now, they have filled some of the hole with a new tax. I consider tuition a tax. I mean, people may see it as a fee, but I see it as money out of parents and kids' pockets.
All right, but
we still are behind.
Well, the $1.6 billion, he was saying, Quinn, was that was partly infused by federal dollars, that when those went away, that the governor did not replenish them with state dollars, and that he's being blamed unfairly for a 67% cut. But I'm not sure that's the case.
Well, I don't agree with Glenn on that. I mean, I well, the budget's $25 billion today without federal money, or rather without hurricane money. And when Governor Blanco left, it was $19 billion. We were fully funding higher ed. When Governor Foster was governor, it was $12 billion. We were fully funding higher ed. I think Governor Jindal does support higher ed. I don't think for a second he would do anything intentionally to hurt higher ed, but the numbers are the numbers.
Well, and that's the old axiom of putting your money where your mouth is. And in this case, the governor's had to make some decisions that were difficult, but he has chosen to cut higher education. I don't think there's any disagreement on that. Okay.
Yes, I think that's an accurate statement.
John, in Lafayette, quickly, you're on with John Kennedy. Good morning.
Good morning, Treasurer Kennedy. I applaud you for trying to help higher education here in Lafayette at ULL. They haven't had a raise in over 6 years. The faculty hasn't. And they were voted by the Chronicle of Higher Education as having the lowest morale in faculty in the whole nation last fall. So things are really dire in our state, and I don't think people quite realize how dire it is. We need quality higher education. My question is, you've talked about the statutory dedications being invaded or cut by our legislators. If they really wanted to do something to help, would you mind elaborating on that a second?
We have about $4 billion, between $3 and $4 billion, which is dedicated monies to 416 special accounts that the legislature has set up with a majority vote in the state treasury. Money automatically flows into those accounts. The legislature could undedicate the money with a majority vote. It doesn't take an amendment to the Constitution or two-thirds vote. It takes a majority vote. Now, some of those dedications make sense. I guess it would depend upon your perspective, but what we really ought to do is go review every single one of those 416 dedications and ask ourselves, look, is this really a priority right now for Louisiana? That hasn't happened because, you know, the people who are getting the money fight hard to keep it, and it's very controversial, but it would be a rational approach. You may decide to keep all 416, but you ought to at least go back and look and take a rational, do a rational analysis and ask yourself why we're doing this and is it achieving the purpose for which we initiated it, and ask if it's more important than our universities and our schools. But this state's, I mean, we got one chance. It's education. And we can't do all of it with tuition. Since 1985, tuition in America has gone up 500%. That's just a fact. That's more than the cost of health care. Most states are reducing tuition to make education more accessible. We have raised tuition, but we've got to do more to get state money to our universities. If we didn't have the money, that would be one thing, but we do. House Bill 142 will reduce our consulting contracts and dedicate the money to universities. Whether you agree with me or disagree with me, I hope you'll call your legislator. It's real easy. The number's 225-342-2040. You can go to my website. I put in a link where you can email your legislator. LATreasury.com, LATREASURY.com. If you support House Bill 142, tell them. If you think I'm wrong, tell them that too.
Thank you, Treasurer Kennedy. Good to talk with you.
Thanks, Jim.
We shall return with Casey Kelly, one of the most prominent songwriters in the world today, who's from Baton Rouge, and he is in our midst. 297-5633 is your number. We'll be back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Frank Barnett producing. Outside the area, please call 877-217-5757, and you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. In our studio is Casey Kelly. He's one of the top songwriters in the world of music, and he hails from Baton Rouge. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Get a little closer, Casey.
All right.
Well, tell us, before we get to your long career in the music world, It started right here, didn't it?
It did. It did indeed. And it's interesting as I had as a teenager, I had some ideas for songs that have recently just been sort of floating up in my mind, and I've been trying to go ahead and work through those songs. Finally, I think I finally know enough to know what it was, what the ideas meant when I got them.
When did you write your first song?
Oh my goodness, I wrote a song in the fourth grade. we went to New Orleans to the zoo, and a friend of mine and I sat in the back of the bus and wrote a song about a hippopotamus.
And what was the title of that?
I think it was Mr. Thippo.
Mr. Thippo.
Mr. Thippo, okay. The hippo, yes.
Okay, well, yeah. So some other songs you've written are a little better known than
I like to think,
Mr.
Yeah.
Thippo, but
yeah.
But it all began in the fourth grade. Where were you going to school at the time?
Oh, my goodness. I don't even remember the name of the school.
But you went to high school where?
Went to high school at U High.
At U High.
Yep. And Vernon Daigle was the mm-hmm. music director over there, and I think took a fairly dim view of the songs I was interested in at that time. But I played clarinet and saxophone and drums and all that stuff in the band, in the school band, and got a really good background in music.
When did you decide to leave Baton Rouge and do your craft in places where you could advance your career?
Well, I had the good fortune to fall in with some people who knew a lot more about music. They were a little bit older than I was, but they had been in popular music. And I got a really good start by being a part of the Greek Fountains. We started then and started writing some songs and making some records. And when that group started to decline, one of the people who'd shown some interest in the Greek Fountains was a guy named Shelby Singleton, who was originally out of Shreveport, but was in New York at that time. And I called him and said, "Look, I want to come up and talk to you about working in New York and writing songs." And he said, "Well, come on." And I ended up going to work for him. I want to say that was probably late '66.
1966,
yes,
so just
yes.
48 years ago.
And oh, you, yeah, well, I'm just getting started. Yeah.
One of your colleagues was Cyril Vedder.
Exactly. Cyril and Don Chesson and Tommy Maselli and Duke Bardwell. We had quite an interesting group.
Now, you're known primarily as a songwriter, but you have performed as well.
And, I have.
And you have come armed and ready here.
Oh,
and for those, why don't you go ahead? I think this could be interesting.
All right.
George Strait, of course, the great country and western star, is coming this way. He'll be at Tiger Stadium tomorrow night for Bayou Country Superfest, and his anthem, his signature song, is arguably one written by our guest, along with the legendary Sonny Throckmorton.
Sonny Throckmorton.
Cowboy Rides Away. But you know, I've heard you sing this song, and I think.
And
I think your version is better than George Strait's.
Oh,
but
can we say that on the air?
We can say that on the air, but and quite often it is better with the person who has originated it. Now, not that George's is bad; it's a very good song, and it's one that we'll be playing long after all of us are gone. But it all began with Sonny Throckmorton and Casey Kelly, and I've heard you do it, and I think you know the words to it. So let's hear from Casey.
All right. I knew the stakes were high right from the start. When she dealt the cards, I bet my heart. Now I hold a hand that I can't play. This is where the cowboy rides away. and my heart is sinking like the setting sun. Setting on the things I wish we'd done. It's time to say goodbye to yesterday. This is where the cowboy rides away. And the last goodbye is the hardest one to say. This is where the cowboy rides away.
All right. Casey Kelly with his song.
Abbreviated version.
Abbreviated version, but we get the point. It's a haunting song.
Ooh,
it's touching. I've heard it a few times. Oh, yeah. How did you and Sonny collaborate on this? Was this like a 15-minute thing, or was it something that took some time?
Well, no, it was, and it's a longer story than we want to talk about here now. But I had accidentally just stumbled on this melody. And I'd wanted to write with Sonny. He had been Songwriter of the Year 3 years in a row and in Nashville. And I wanted to write with him, and I saw my opportunity. And everybody was saying, well, that's a great melody. I was sitting around playing it. And so I said, well, Sonny, let's write that one. And I went out to his house, and there's a long story I tell sometimes on stage, and it takes up most of the time for the whole set. Uh-huh. But we stumbled on this idea, and I said, you know, the only way I can see to do that is if we just compare the end of a relationship to one of those old Western movies, and do it like this is the place in the movie where the cowboy rides away. And he says, I like that. He wrote down the cowboy rides away, and we just went from there. And he demoed the song. He went and made a rendition of it without telling me, which didn't please me at the time.
I wouldn't think so.
But as a result of that, where Sonny was working, Harlan Howard, the great songwriter, maven of country music, got a hold of it. And when George Strait's manager went to look for songs at Harlan's, and Harlan had played him everything he wanted him to record, and he turned them all down, he said, well, shoot, I got this one I really like here. And he played it, and he actually, Harlan Howard, got us the cut of the song. It was amazing.
Casey Kelly, the co-writer of Cowboy Rides Away. And I have a feeling we might hear that tomorrow night at Tiger Stadium when George Strait performs. It is usually what he closes the show with, isn't it?
He's been very good to us and used it and as his signature song that he closes with every time. So every time there's a live album or any kind of thing like that, we end up on there with our song. Mm-hmm. Now, we're gonna
hopefully you get some royalties.
Oh yes, that's been a godsend. That song.
You moved to Nashville in 78, right, or thereabouts?
Thereabouts. It was before that. 76 is I moved there from Los Angeles, and worked for House of Gold Music, and I've been at several publishing places, mm-hmm. but.
Well, you not only wrote that song, but you've written for Kenny Rogers.
Yes, sir.
One of his big hits, Anyone Who Isn't Me Tonight.
That's exactly right. He and
Dottie West, right?
And Dottie West did it. And Dolly Parton sang it with him as well. We have a good video of that one. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Dottie West and Kenny Rogers were pretty strong together, though.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. A great record.
Tanya Tucker.
Tanya Tucker, Soon.
Yeah, one of her big hits.
Yeah, she's got a couple of things for us. Yeah.
T.G. Shepherd.
Somewhere Down the Line.
Yeah, all of those written by Casey Kelly. But it's not just country and Western music. You've branched out. You wrote a hit song for America.
Yes, sir.
And the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. So
they've been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
Met them in New York when I first moved up there. They had just had Buy For Me the Rain.
Mm-hmm. our, I presume, mutual friend, the late, great John Fred Gourier, he once said that songwriters kind of hit their peaks before they're 30, that after that it gets tough. I don't think you would agree with that. You've done some of your best work since you were 30 years old.
I'm still learning how to write what I think I know I want to write. I think it depends. It depends a lot on the market, because we're judged by how our songs do getting on the radio or that sort of thing, as opposed to by other people who know how to write songs and that sort of thing. But there's a lot of things that never.
One of your colleagues or former colleagues asked me to ask you. You changed your name at one point.
I did.
Right. You didn't grow up as Casey Kelly, did you?
That's correct.
So what prompted that?
Oh, it's really pretty innocent. It's just that I had made, I think, a lot of mistakes in the music business, just by being naive and honest and just saying, you know, when somebody did something that I didn't like or I felt something wasn't right, I would just say it. And that isn't very popular to do, and it doesn't make people want to work with you very much. And I had an opportunity to do something on the basis of my songs, and people were going to work with me, some big-time managers. And they said, look, let's get you some cuts on these songs. And I said, well, you know, I'm having trouble right now because there's a lot of people out there who for whatever reason, don't want to work with me. And it wasn't really anything horrible that I had done. It's just I sort of called them on some of the things that happened. They promise you things, and then it doesn't happen. And I was stupid enough to say, hey, you promised me that, and you didn't.
Well, good for you.
So I just said, you know, I think if they didn't know it was me, I think they would cut my songs. And so we tried it, and it worked.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on the air with Casey Kelly. Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Jim? How you doing, Jim? Mr. Kelly, just like a question. What do you think about the new young songwriter, Mr. Hunter Hayes, from Louisiana again, his songwriting, and what's the difference between a tune and a song? Thank you.
The spelling is the difference between tune and song. And Hunter Hayes is fantastic. He's a freak of nature. That people don't usually have that kind of sophistication at that age, and he's going to do some terrific stuff on top of what he's done already.
How does a guy like George Strait keep doing it? He's 62 now, and supposedly this is one of his last appearances. Somehow I doubt that, but he keeps on keeping on.
Yeah, he announced that he wasn't backing out of the business. This wasn't a farewell tour, but everybody keeps calling it that anyway. It's a easy way to do it. George is just one of those people that we met him when he first came to Nashville at an awards dinner. He was just there to kind of observe, and it's just a nice guy, and I think a lot of people identify with him. I think he represents what people want to think country artists are like, and that's what he is. And that's pretty honest. I mean, he does what he likes, and there's no way you're going to get another song on there if he doesn't like it. If he doesn't feel like that's what is part of his story, he's not going to do the song.
You'll be watching him tomorrow night?
I will be watching, thanks to Paul Arrigo and Stacy Simon of Visit Baton Rouge. We got some tickets to come down here. It's not easy to get tickets for these things, and I want to thank them for making sure we'd be there the hardest part about the whole thing is waiting through the whole show to hear my song
to hear
last.
Well, Frank Barnett, I think we've got a sampling of George Strait singing Cowboy Rides Away. Let's give a little listen to the legendary George Strait. His version's not bad either.
No.
You never get tired of hearing it, do you?
It's very much patterned after Sonny's demo that he did, which is another part of the business that a lot of people are not aware of. But you come in with a song with some lyrics and a few guitar chords and a melody, and these studio musicians, whoever they happen to be, make it into a record. They make it sound like a record, and largely the cuts you get, besides the quality of the song, are based on the fact that they made it sound like it was a hit record.
How often do you get back to Baton Rouge?
Not often enough. It's been a while now. I've been involved in a few things that have kept me away, but I like to get down as often as I can, eat the right food, and drink some community coffee, and just see everybody again. But we're going to try to come back and play pretty soon.
We'd like that.
I love it myself.
Thank you, Casey Kelly, and congratulations on a fabulous career, and we're glad you're back in your hometown.
Thanks, Jim.
And we'll be back tomorrow for Frank Barnett. I'm Jim Engster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.